Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of Radcast. This month, we're going to be getting stuck into one of those ever-present topics in radiology, which is teleradiology. We'll be chatting with a couple of radiologists that have set up their own company called Hexarad. But if that isn't enough to occupy them, they also have their fingers in several other pies as well. So we're going to be talking generally about entrepreneurship in radiology too.
So over to you now, guys. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Amy Davis. I'm a consultant radiologist and co-founder and CCO of Hexarad.
I'm Sam Dumonte, also consultant radiologist working at St George's Hospital in London, co-founder Hexarad, and I'm the CFO.
Great.
So how do you know each other?
We actually met, we trained together at St George's in different year groups, but the four co-founders of Hexarad all trained together at St George's, so we met on the training programme there. So
it does actually sound like there was a group of you then who were there sort of at the similar kind of time, and you were all quite driven and shared some level of entrepreneurial spirit. So has that really fostered innovation?
Yeah, I think so. We basically enjoy each other's company. We all have slightly different things that we were doing outside of radiology, either in our previous lives or at the time that we met. So we've all four of us have always been interested in doing something additional and have had, I guess you'd call it, portfolio careers to date. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to create something where we could carry on working together and I guess have a bit of control and autonomy over our working lives.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, when I first met Jay, we started talking. He's in my year group as a registrar, and we'd both done the same interview course.
Yes.
To try and get in, and we weren't, neither of us were particularly impressed with the course that we'd been on, and then we got talking and sort of decided maybe we could do a much better job. We didn't think it would be very difficult because it was so bad, the course we went on. and so that kind of happened first, actually. You know, that business started quite a bit before Hexarad. But so it gave Jay and I a chance to work together. We're still doing it today, actually, because we really enjoy it. We're obviously not doing sort of courses where people attend, so we're just doing webcasts. But it's been popular again. And so that was helpful because we already had a working relationship. And then the two of us kind of joined Fazana and Amy. And I guess at first, Amy, I don't know if you agree, but we didn't really have like a very fixed idea about what it was that exactly.
We didn't have a plan at all.
No.
It was, we used to sit around and chat about it at work in the registrar room or, you know, at the pub after work, just what
plans of world
do.
Domination. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. just about, it was around the time that the only qualified provider thing had come in. And I remember there being a consultant at St George at the time who was like, oh, you're all going to end up working for some big American conglomerate. Your lives are going to be awful. and we just thought we wanted to do something relatively small, actually, where we could just carry on working together. So initially we thought a group of us would just get some Google style offices in London somewhere, have a kind of 4-day week job in the NHS and have a day where we spent time in an office together reporting. So initially we just looked to get some reporting work for a small group, a bit like a consortium. But the timing for us was quite fortuitous because we had some early conversations with Alliance Medical and they were looking for people to do their reporting. And that kind of snowballed into Hexarad, into us essentially building a fully fledged tele-reporting company.
Right.
We do joke a little bit that if we knew back then what we were letting ourselves in for and how much hard work it would be, would we have done it? I think we all still would have done it, actually, because we're all a little bit crazy. But yeah, so it's been a journey and we've ended up somewhere where we didn't plan to get to. But now that we're here, we're really excited. And along the way, we've had lots of ups and downs and twists and turns. It's not been a straight line to get where we are.
It's part of the journey, though, isn't it? That's the
exactly. That's the bit that's fun.
Yeah,
the kind of fast-paced, quick decisions. You know, lots of things happening at once. I think if we were a huge established company, it wouldn't be as much fun to work in the startup space. It's quite exciting and good fun.
I agree with all that, and especially Amy's comment about if we'd known what it was going to be like, maybe we would have thought twice. I think sometimes people think, you know, starting businesses is fun.
Mm-hmm.
The idea at the beginning is fun and then there's no more fun. it's sort of, some people, you know, describe being a startup, it's like staring into the abyss while chewing glass. It's that sort of thing, you know. It's most of it is awful. You know, you're always on the verge of dying, you know, or, you know, not personally, but the business, you know, and so a lot of it is just about survival. I think we've all learned, you know, a lot about entrepreneurship. A massive part of it is about perseverance.
Yeah.
Because at any given moment, you know, I could think of a dozen different moments when, you know, it could have all gone wrong and it could have just died, right, Amy?
That's the difference between me and Sam. Sam's very realistic and pragmatic, and I am a complete optimist. So even when things went completely wrong and, you know, an outside person would be like, nah, it's never going to work, I was just always like, oh, well, you know, little bump, we'll get there. I was always so optimistic. I still am. I'm still like, no, of course it's going to work. Why would it not? And I think that balance has actually been really helpful.
If you're a solo founder, you need to be more like Amy. You need to be more delusional. But successful founders tend to be slightly sort of over optimistic, but not delusional, right? So you do have to have that. Otherwise, if you're like me, you didn't have that sort of backup, you'd probably have stopped because, you know, you're thinking rationally, what are the chances of this working?
Absolutely.
And also, I think there's that thing about, you know, people talk about luck and, you know, right place, right time. That's massive, of course, but you do have to put yourself in a position to take advantage of something coming along. And we had done that. So, yeah, we were lucky to a certain extent, but, you know, we already made that first step to create a group that was to do something. So, you know, there's that thing about, you know, making your own luck or whatever, however you want to describe it. So that's another important lesson, I think.
Yeah, I imagine with the mix of personalities in the group, you probably would have succeeded in whatever you eventually found yourselves doing. It just happened to be teleradiology, but it's more about the balance of the personalities and what the different people bring to the overall group rather than the actual task.
Yeah, I think that's critical. I think as well that we're maybe quite unusual. It's not that, you know, we're not always loving each other's company, but we're quite a stable group, you know, where we work well together, and when there is, you know, tension or, you know, if someone's not happy about something, like that works quite well as well, you know, everyone's all about just talking about it, and there are many moments of, you know, pressure or, you know, so something that happens often in startups is that there are moments when one person is working way harder than everyone else, or two people working way harder than them, and we've all individually been through that, you know. So at the moment, like, one of our other founders, Jay, is working way harder probably than anyone else because of
always me working way harder than anyone else.
I know exactly. You can tell that. And that leads to tension, right? Because you know, especially if you feel like, you know, the other members of the group are not, but that so the group works well because everyone, you know, we've been working together long enough to remember that we've all done our fair share.
And even some people who don't necessarily like do all the dog work, they bring other stuff to the equation, which maybe someone who does more of the hands-on stuff can't do without them. So it's all about having that balance, not everyone a good mix of different team roles.
We've definitely all done grunt work and still do. We're very much hands-on founders. We have, you know, we do have employed staff now who help us a lot. I wouldn't say they really do grunt work. They do quite important work. But, you know, we've got a bigger team than we started out with. But it's definitely still all hands on deck. I mean, the thing that's keeping Jay really busy at the moment, I ended up helping out with over the weekend just because somebody had to. You know, we're very much like that. We'll support each other. And we all know, you know, when somebody is working harder than the other one, your turn's next or your turn's coming, you know, where it's going to be you that's, someone help me, please. And the rest of us are always happy to pitch in and help out with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you need, you know, especially when you start out doing anything, you need quite strong generalists, you know. No point hiring some genius who's amazing at coding, right, on day one of some startup, right, you know.
Yeah.
You need people that can do lots of different things quite well. So part of that is down to money. Right? So the stuff I do, a lot of the finance stuff. So, you know, we had to build our own billing engine and an Access database. You know, Jay built the website. You know, I could list many things like that. And if you had to pay for all those things, you know, it cost you tens of thousands of pounds. And so you do want people that are willing to pitch in, like Amy said, but also have their useful skills. And then there's that transition to when the company starts getting bigger and, you know, start to sort of professionalize some of the roles, there's a sort of scaling thing where, you know, then the individual needs to change. So from being a sort of generalist who's doing everything to becoming a manager of other people. And that is a difficult transition that doesn't, you know, some people find that easier than others.
Yeah, taking a step back and delegating tasks that you used to do and you think that only you can do well. That's
I don't delegate anything. There are no finance staff apart from me. Jay's hired like about 20 people.
We'll get you someone, Sam.
Nice transparency there.
Got your hands on the purse strings.
Yeah, he's the one we have to go begging to for money.
Okay, so what exactly is Hexarad then?
I was just thinking that. We've had spent all of this time, we haven't even told you what we are. So Hexarad is a clinically led teleradiology company. We're, as we've discussed, founded and managed by NHS consultant radiologists, and we are a tech-enabled company. So the reason why Jay's been so busy, and Sam actually recently, is because we've built our own proprietary tech and software that we use to make our company more efficient, make our workflow faster, safer. Mm-hmm. Our governance structures are, actually Jay did a lot of our governance work as well. I'm now thinking I'm listing everything and Jay's done it all. He never comes out to speak to people because he's always at home working.
At least you're giving him credit.
Yeah, exactly. We say thanks a lot.
Not said anything about Fajana yet. That's a bit telling, isn't it?
I know. Well, you know, she's the boss, so we just do what she says.
Do what she says, yeah.
Yeah. So we've built our own systems from the ground up to enable us to scale and for the kind of the modern world. So our systems are tech-enabled with the ability to host third-party AI, for example. I'll let Sam talk about some of the other software that we've built in-house because he's done more of that than I have. But there's two main things that we're really proud of, and one is the tech that we've built that Sam will go on to discuss, but the other is just the values of the company. So being radiologists ourselves, and all of us except Fazana still work in the NHS. Fazana has left because she's sort of leading the company. Someone's got to run the company. And being radiologists ourselves, we can see, you know, just from working in the NHS, the stress and the burnout amongst radiologists, the kind of work-life balance that you need to try and hit as best as you can. Mm-hmm. And just as radiologists ourselves, we know how we would want to work if we're working for a teleradiology company and the things that would be important for us. And so that's always at the forefront of our mind. So we get amazing feedback from the radiologists who report with us. We really value them, and we know that they're like one of the most important parts of our business. And so it's the small things, really. You know, we send the positive feedback. We have regular learning from discrepancy meetings, as you have to, similar that happens in the NHS. But we really encourage people to mention the good spots and, you know, foster a nice, supportive working environment in that sense. And then other small things. So we send a goodness box out to our radiologists every month as a thank you. It's just filled with healthy snacks. And we send them to ourselves as well. You know, I actually get really excited when I get it every month because they're always really nice. One of our radiologists actually said, don't bother sending it to me. I'm only interested in pork scratchings. This is too healthy. I won't name and shame him. He's a great guy. You know, we're currently doing a bit of an IT upgrade because we've got our own custom built RIS, so there's a little bit of a change happening for our reporters, and you know that's always annoying, isn't it? Change, no one likes it. So just as a way of thank you, we sent everybody a thermos flask just to say thanks for bearing with us, because you know we're making their lives a little bit harder. But and it's those small things that people really value. Yeah, on the dotted line, anytime. But you know, that's one of the things that that's essentially what we started out doing, was trying to create something that would give us a good work-life balance. We have not managed that at all because we're all working far too hard. But for everybody who works with us, I like to think that we have provided that for them, and eventually we will get there ourselves as well.
It's quite noble that you sacrificed your work-life balance for the radiologist working
for you. I know. My husband thinks I'm crazy. He always said, because I've always had, not always, I had a second job for 10 years. So I used to be an editor at the BMJ, which happened accidentally when I didn't get a job in MTAS and I went and worked there as the editorial registrar. I ended up setting up a section called Endgames. Don't know if you read it, but it's a medical education section that was aimed at junior doctors. So when I had my editorial registrar job there, that's what they were trying to focus on. So they gave me a page and I sort of designed and developed the content, and that page still runs today. It's been, I think, like 14 years. And I was the associate editor managing that page for 10 years. And in that time, I also did my radiology training, did all my radiology exams, got a consultant job, started Hexarad, had two kids. And so when I finished my radiology exams, my husband was like, "You're just going to find something else to do. You always do." And I was like, no, this is it. I'm just like, I'm going to enjoy life. I'm actually going to have some time. And then
up pops
Hexarad. And I was like, sorry. But, you know, that's just the name.
Very clumsy, AB. You keep accidentally falling into things. Hexarad, BMJ Online.
I know. My husband says I can't sit still. And I think that's the problem. If I haven't got something to do, I get agitated.
I think Amy's point about keeping the radiologists happy is really important. Not only, you know, because it's the right thing to do and culturally, but if you think about the question, does teleradiology solve the workforce crisis or the supply-demand imbalance? It's not really, the answer isn't obvious, right? Because unless it increases the overall capacity of the system, it's not helping really to solve the problem. It's just making it more expensive for hospitals to report staff. So my point is that to help bridge the gap between supply and demand, we do need more consultants to do this type of work. So at the moment, it's the proportion of consultants to do outsourcing is relatively small. And so if you want that to increase, then you have to treat the consultants really well. And you have to make the working environment that you create as good as possible. So there's lots of things that feed into that, you know, what you pay them, what the setup is at home, and how the technology works is crucial as well. Mm-hmm. How the interaction works with operations staff. Do they get sent the right type of work, the right amount of work, at the right time? All those things are really important. So there's a lot that goes into keeping a consultant happy. And we're trying to, you know, improve every single one of those kind of touch points, if you like. With the aim being to, you know, if consultants want to do this type of work and if they're thinking about it, we want them to come and work for us.
So your argument is that you're actually helping the workforce crisis by encouraging more radiologists to do teleradiology.
Well, if someone switched from one of the competitors to us, that's not really helping the situation, is it?
No, it's not.
Overall, that's not increasing the amount of reporting capacity. But if you create a company or an environment that's attractive enough that encourages the consultants that don't do this type of work at the moment to do some extra work, then that to a certain extent is helping the situation because there's more reporting about that. That's my point. So it's important, you know, from a just treating people in the right way sense, but it's also important commercially because the radiologists are the scarce resource. It's really crucial not to lose sight of that. That's really important from a business point of view as well.
So there are already quite a few established players in the teleradiology space. So, you know, Medica, Four Ways, Everlight, etc. What was the opportunity or gap in the market that you saw?
So a few things, really. I think one is the technology. So all these companies interface in a different way with the customers. We won't get into the details, but the way that you do that is quite has implications in terms of not only what it's like to report for a particular company, but also what you can do in the back end in terms of optimizing the workflow. And so we definitely saw an opportunity there to try and improve things. And also we're quite interested in workflow optimization, which kind of it feeds into what we've already been discussing, which is, you know, the experience for the radiologist. And, you know, just from, you know, speaking to people that work for these companies, you know, it doesn't always seem to work that well. So when we first started, we just, you know, allocated scans just based on a spreadsheet, right? And that's just not scalable. It's fine to do those sort of things when you've got five reporters. But as soon as you're approaching sort of 30, 40 people, it doesn't work.
Yeah. we still do a lot of stuff on spreadsheets.
Yeah, so you can't do that. So then I built a much more complicated workflow manager on an Excel spreadsheet, which did the job, but it was just really, it took like a couple of minutes to calculate. That's how like complicated it was. And so then we converted that into our own like workflow manager on a web application. So someone who we're hoping is going to become our CTO built that for us based on what I'd built. But, you know, this new version does so much more than mine did.
So is this like using coding and like, is this
quite... Yeah. So it's a web application built on Ruby on Rails.
Oh, wow.
That's what we use now to organise how the work is allocated to the different reporters. And that's not an easy thing to do because the easy bit is the reporters tell you what they want to report.
Mm-hmm.
But they all have different profiles about what they can report. And on top of that, they have a kind of profile about what they would prefer to report, which is different from what they can report. So this, again, is about how do you keep them happy? So without, you know, going into too much detail, our system makes it very easy for operations. There's a dashboard which allows them to allocate not only like work that the reporter can report, but also wants to report the right amount of work and on the right day. So for instance, you know, today, if that reporter is not working, they won't appear on the dashboard. And it's all split into subspecialty, it's really transformed the way that we work. You know, there are no complaints from the reporters. I didn't get sent the right stuff. I didn't send the right amount of scans. You know, so that's been huge for us. And this is really just like the first version. There's a lot more that this can do.
Yeah.
As soon as you just need to connect it to the RIS and it can start, you know, then we're talking about, you know, auto allocation. So you don't need a human being. That's not an easy thing to do, but, you know, it's possible. And just going off at a tangent, you know, I think that there's a lesson there about when you're building your own company to try and solve the problem first yourself.
Yeah. Do as much in-house as possible.
If I hadn't built my Excel version of the, I wouldn't really know what I wanted. I could specify what the problem was.
Yeah.
But the solution would have been actually very difficult. If I just described the problem to the programmer, he would not know what, you know, he wouldn't have known what to build. So there's a lot of value in solving the problem yourself with either, you know, whatever it is, spreadsheet or, you know, it doesn't even have to be something like an actual thing like an Access database or especially just even like, you know, a pathway for something, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But even though you know it's not scalable when you do it, it means that when you come to improve it or make it scalable, that you've already got a very good idea in your mind about what it's going to look like. Sorry, just going off at a tangent then.
Just going through the
process. So I think it's very valuable to try and do things yourself first rather than just getting people in.
Sam's love of spreadsheets comes from his previous life before radiology as well. You should tell them about that, Sam.
Yeah, we were going to ask you about that. Yeah, so other than being this world-famous interview course,
Founder.
you were a commodities trader, weren't you, back in your previous life?
Yeah, that's right. So I had a few different jobs. The main one was working for Total, the French oil company, as a structured product trader in commodities. So to give you an example, so people on the continent or companies, they buy gas in very complex formulas that are like indexed to like oil and currencies. And so sometimes they want to buy more gas on that basis, or they want to buy something called a swap to lock in the price.
Yeah.
And that's just an example of the sort of thing. So I would, a company would ring and say like, I want a swap priced on, you know, this formula. And so I would have to, you know, you have to build a model very quickly, you know, usually on Excel or something.
Yeah.
And price it up based on market prices of all the different products in the formula. You know, you have to take into account all the currency rates and everything. And then you would transact with a customer that will create a position in currencies and commodities and stuff. And then either you would back to back that. So then you just collect your, you know, your margin in between, or you may sometimes keep that position and trade it. So that's the sort of thing that I did. But, you know, the benefit of doing that is you get very good at building like models and, you know, using Excel and stuff. I didn't really think it would be that useful, but it has. Yeah. And just for transparency, I want to say that Amy is not great at Excel.
I'm terrible. I sent him my marketing budget on a spreadsheet and he's like, it took me ages because I was so worried about what he would say about my Excel skills. And he opened up, it's like, I spotted a mistake in the first cell I looked at. I was like, no. It took me about an hour to work out how to freeze the panes and just do an auto sum. But in my defense, there was no, like, I know Sam's older than me, but in my defence, there was no ID. I know, it's got to be said, it's like the running joke in our company. There was no, like, IT GCSE when I was younger. The only thing you could do was get a certificate. So I have actually got a certificate in Excel. Right. But in order to get that, all I had to do was put things in the cells. I don't think there was any other function. Sorry, I was going to take over your role and ask Sam why he then chose to become a doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm now interviewing my co-founder.
Yeah, I still wonder that myself. Where did it all go wrong? But I did it for quite a long time, and I didn't leave because I hated it. I was still enjoying it, but
got fired.
I didn't get fired. No. But I did see plenty of other people getting fired. So,
cutthroat.
Yeah, you know, you only have to make a few mistakes, and you know, you're out. It's, you know, there's still people, my colleagues that are still there now. You know,
yeah,
all these years later. But you know, it is kind of, you know, trading, that sort of thing. It's the idea is to sort of get in and shortish amount of time, and you know, make money and get out, and you know. And so the problem was, if I really wanted to cash in, I should have stayed a bit longer, really. But then if I wanted to do medicine, it takes so long that I would just have been too late. So it's a bit of a sort of trade-off. But yeah, I did it for a long time, maybe getting a bit bored. And I always had this thing in my head about doing medicine. And I had quite a few friends that were doctors. They all told me not to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure they were like just in awe of
you. Mad, yeah. What are you doing? Yeah, yeah. And actually, you know, obviously enjoyed medical school. It's fantastic chance to get back to university. And there were lots of graduates like doing it at the same time. So that was really fun. But yeah, I didn't enjoy my years as a junior doctor. That was awful. And you know, several points I thought about just quitting because I just didn't enjoy, you know, being a junior doctor.
In your undergrad, you did physics, didn't you, at Oxford? So were you thinking about doing medicine before that, or was it something...
No.
Was it like an epiphany you had while over a spreadsheet one night, you just decided they wanted to do something?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is that doing radiology is not... There are similarities. You know, you've got these big screens, you know, lots of information that you've got to analyse quickly and make a decision. Like, there are analogies.
Did you use that in your radiology interview?
No, I didn't. I didn't, but I should have.
Yeah,
I should have.
So how are things going with Hexamad then? How are you growing and how are you finding things?
Things are going really well. We are growing all the time. We've just hired some new operations and admin staff to join our team. We brought on a marketing director, and a commercial analyst is joining us next month. Despite COVID, actually, we managed to sign new customers, so we're growing our scan volume, and we have got a good bunch of reporters currently working with us, and a few ready to start. So we haven't actually had a problem recruiting radiologists yet, which is great, because we thought that would be the hardest part of the business. But I have been told, I have no way of verifying this, but somebody told me we're the most referred to telereporting company for radiologists, as in like the word of mouth spread.
Yeah,
I mean, I've got no way of verifying that, so I throw it out there and then say I can't verify it, but this is what I've been I was told that by a recruitment specialist, and he speaks to lots of radiologists, and he said that, you know, everybody wants to work for us, which is great.
How many radiologists do you have on your books at the moment?
I'm not a detail person, Sam.
Just make it up.
I think like 40 or 50.
And are they mainly concentrated in London or?
No, all over the UK, actually. And all range of, I mean, obviously they're all consultants. Everyone's had NHS consultant experience for a few years, because you need that for a lot of the NHS contracts. But, you know, range from relatively young consultants, kind of, you know, 3, 4, 5 years out of training, through to, we've actually got a couple of retired consultants. They were with us before they retired, but they've now retired from the NHS and just staying on reporting with us, to everything in between. And we've got DGH radiologists all the way up to like quaternary referral centre radiologists. In fact, we've got some amazing And all of our radiologists are amazing, actually. I get a lot of really nice feedback from our other radiologists talking about our other radiologists, you know, so people within the network, in the Hexarad family,
yeah,
who hadn't met before, and it'd be like, oh, I peer-reviewed one of their scans the other day, they're so good, it was amazing, they picked this up. And, you know, it's really nice, you get to hear that kind of feedback.
Happy family.
And we had, we've had a private centre in London ask us to report a few of their scans, which, you know, obviously we did. And then and then now we sent them to one of our fantastic head and neck reporters, and the private referrers come back and said they're basically name referring to her through Hexarad, which is great. So obviously we told her, you know, big kudos to her, said thanks very much. And, you know, so, you know, when we get that kind of positive feedback, we do share it with everybody. In fact, we do share it with everybody, so everyone will know. You know, it's nice to give those people a pat on the back. And we had actually just today, somebody sent an email to one of our reporters that had come from an MSK referrer. I'm not sure if they were an orthopaedic surgeon or neurosurgeon, but sent a letter to our reporter saying it's the best radiology report they've ever seen in the 12 years they've been practicing. And said that they hope to see more reports from that radiologist. We've actually had really good feedback from a patient, and to get that is almost unheard of in radiology. Yeah. But we had we actually had a patient write a letter to one of our reporters also saying that it was one of the best reports they'd ever seen.
Amazing.
And then said you should, I can't remember what it was, said something like everybody else in radiology should learn from you or something like that, you know, really nice. So to get that kind of feedback from a patient, I mean, you know, it's rare enough getting it from the referrers, and we get that quite regularly actually, which is lovely. So, but, you know, a patient actually took the time to send something in is lovely, because they obviously don't meet the radiologist ever. Most patients don't even know what a radiologist is. So,
And it's one of the bad things about radiology, right, is that the feedback is always a miss or something, usually. It's quite attritional, you know, after a while it gets to you, because, you know, especially in the NHS environment, you know, you don't,
it's always negative.
And there's reasons for that, right? Because that's the way it's structured, right? You know, you have learning from discrepancies, meetings, and that's all of that things that have been missed. So rather than, you know, great pickups and stuff like that. But it would be nice to have more emphasis on positives.
So if you're getting all this fantastic feedback from patients and referrers, etc., does that mean that your recruitment process for consultants is very strict, or do you kind of, do you make it stricter as you see the standard getting better?
I think, you know, there's certain guidelines you have to follow anyway, really. If you want to contract with the NHS, a lot of the frameworks in NHS contracts have stipulations like GMC registered, FRCR trained, experience as an NHS consultant. And, you know, all of the teleradiology companies will have to adhere to that. Some contracts you can bypass some of those rules. But, you know, generally, and I think generally, all radiologists, we're all doctors, we've all worked really hard, we all take pride in our work. I think if you give people the environment where they can flourish, you're going to get those good results. Obviously we have got some people doing teleradiology with us who probably wouldn't have considered it before, you know, so you're getting a different kind of person, I guess. But it doesn't make them a better or worse radiologist from the other person who does teleradiology. You know, we get, so those two examples I just gave you for amazing feedback. So the patient feedback went to a general radiologist and a DGH. The MSK person feedback was to another DGH radiologist. And the first lot of feedback I met, the private referrer, was to one of our reporters who works in a tertiary referral centre. So, you know, it doesn't really matter who the, you know, we're all trained to the same level and same standard, but if you create an environment where people can work well, and as Sam described earlier, reporting things they like to report in and you take away all the extra stress that radiologists have to deal with in their day-to-day life, then you're bound to get good reports, you're bound to get the best out of the people that you're working with.
That's very true.
You know, I like to think that we're all good radiologists, and we can all be great when we're working in the right kind of environment and the right kind of way. And we're quite a supportive group. So, you know, I report, because I do some tele-reporting with Hexarad, and I reported a gynae scan, that's my wheelhouse, and it had a hip attached to it, which is not my wheelhouse, don't do MSK at all. So I just called up one of our other reporters and was like, oh, can you double report this with me? Can you have a look at the hip?
Yeah.
And in some teleradiology environments, people would be like, well, I'm not going to get paid for that. So, you know, we're only going to do it. But actually, we've never found that because we foster that nice family environment, you know, with a supportive group of people who encourage that kind of behaviour because it does improve outcomes, essentially. You know, at the end of the day, the scan is a patient, so and all doctors want to do right by patients. You just have to provide the environment in which people can really shine. So that's what we try and do. And yeah, I think we're being successful at it, actually. I think we're doing really well, not to pat myself on the back and the rest of the team. But, you know, and actually it's not down to just one person in our company. It's absolutely everybody. From the top, from Fazana, spending a lot of time thinking about our values and what kind of company we want to be. And she's really good as a CEO because, you know, we kind of all think it, but she makes sure that the whole company knows that and that it's a core part of everybody's thinking.
Yeah.
She makes sure that all of our operations and admin team understand radiology because there's a lot of people in healthcare who don't even really understand radiology. So we've done a lot of work with our teams to be like, you know, this scan is a patient. There is somebody at the end of it. It's not just a set of images. It, you know, it's a really important part of a patient's journey. And so all of our admin and ops team are also amazing with our reporters. They have really good communication. They know them really well. That just makes for a better working environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it must be something to do with your environment because a lot of other teleradiology companies will have the same selection criteria, but the feedback that you often get from other teleradiology companies isn't as good. It's often quite critical, isn't it? And often, like in the morning, the surgical consultant will come to the radiology department to get a scan looked at again because they don't trust the teleradiology report.
I mean, a lot of that is getting your message across as well. I mean, you know, the teleradiology in itself has a bit of a bad name. People just don't like it. They, you know, they just assume it's rubbish because that, you know, that's where it started out. And so a lot of our competitors had to overcome that hurdle, which thankfully for us, we haven't because teleradiology is so commonplace now. So we haven't had to convince the world that it's okay. And the other thing is you have to really get to know the people that you're working with. And that's where our operations team are really good. And the fact that because we're clinically led, we know the importance of actually having those conversations with the local clinicians. So we make ourselves really available for that. And if we can't get hold of the reporter, all four of us are radiologists. So, you know, we can often help with whatever the question is.
One thing to say about, you know, in fairness to the other companies is that it's much easier to do all these things when you're relatively small.
Yeah.
And trying to scale up these cultural values and all these things that Amy's been talking about is not easy.
Do you think you'll be able to maintain them as you do scale up, or is it inevitable?
I think it's possible, and I think that's our aim. You know, we do talk about it, but it's not easy at all. Because you know, when you start out, you can do everything. When you talk to the customer, you deal with operations, you deal with, you know, you're hands on. There's nothing that you don't know. But as you, that's not scalable. So as you get bigger, you know, you inevitably, as founders and directors, we will inevitably get pushed further and further away from the coalface. So our job is to make sure that the staff that we hire and train perpetuate the values that we're trying to instill in the company. So that's the hard bit, and that's what we're trying to do.
It's organisational culture, isn't it? Having a culture which then permeates the whole.
Which is kind of something that you have to nail from the start, because to try and change things further down the line is going to be much harder.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, you know, some companies go to like extremes to control the culture from the start. So I think, is it Workday, which is a big US company? So the founders there interviewed the first 500 employees, like the CEO, like every single employee. that's like, you know, can you imagine doing that?
Yeah.
You know, that's how seriously some companies
So something else that we kind of briefly touched on earlier was the question of AI in the teleradiology space and how you kind of would integrate that. So obviously, between you have quite techie backgrounds, and Fazana has written guidelines on AI in healthcare for the Association of Medical Royal Colleges. So do you have anything in the pipeline, or what are your plans regarding AI integration?
So basically the systems that we've built in-house are forward-thinking tech systems. So we don't have plans to develop any AI imaging software of our own, but we mm-hmm. can facilitate the hosting of third-party AI through our system. And that can be used either for our customers, you know, potentially if we have relationships with multiple AI providers, our customers can pick and choose which ones of those they want. And we'll have gone through those kind of governance processes and steps, and we can present them to the customer rather than, I think, in an NHS trust trying to decide which one of the thousands out there is actually going to be any good. Mm-hmm. is quite difficult. So that's mm-hmm. one option. I think before that stage, the ability to have a large volume of scans and a good group of radiologists, that we could potentially facilitate the training of AI or the testing of AI within mm-hmm. our remit. And then there's using AI, as Sam alluded to earlier, for the non-diagnostic, non-imaging related areas of the business, like managing workflow. And that's probably where we see ourselves more.
Yeah, I think that they're the sort of, you know, low-hanging fruit is using AI more for workflow management or to mm-hmm. improve the efficiency of the workflow versus, you know, diagnostic imaging AI, which it definitely is going to become important. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, AI that helps you process the scans, if you want to put it that way, more efficiently, is probably going to have a bigger impact. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, well, what's the problem at the moment? The problem is that, you know, we need to report more scans, right? So a lot of the AI products don't help you with that, do they? A lot of them will be, you know, I'm just inventing, say, a fracture detection tool that, you know, the x-ray pops up and then another image pops up with a circle around it. You know, that just slows you down.
Yeah, yeah.
It might make you more accurate, but, you know, how many clinically important fractures is it going to pick up and that sort of thing. So a lot of the tools actually could probably slow you down.
Yeah, generate
one. Not all of them. But so it's not always obvious. Well, it's not an easy sell for some of these AI companies to try and deliver their products into hospitals. So as Amy said, you know, teleradiology platform is a much more sensible way of trying to deliver your product. Another way, for instance, is to try and integrate your AI product into a PAC system for delivery, rather than just trying to sell like an individual algorithm to a hospital. You know, AI is not going to get delivered like that.
Yeah.
No hospital has the confidence to say, I'm going to pick this lung nodule. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. So we see, you know, in terms of clinical AI, we think that our platform would be a good way of delivering.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget about that other side of AI, the work, you know, the workflow kind of thing. Everyone's always drawn in by the, you know, the image that a piece of software can create where there's a tumor that's highlighted in a different color or, you know, the fractures highlighted or whatever. But I think that there is so much more that it can do.
What's also ironic about that, though, is that, you know, there's a lot of interest in, you know, AI for workflow, but most radiology departments don't even have proper e-rostering system, right? Yeah. Some like Excel spreadsheet, or even worse, on Word document. You know? I run the rotor at St. George's, and I built, you know, surprise, surprise, built, you know, it's sort of a semi-automated system. So, you know, everyone's got a template, and you can enter the annual leave, and so and it produces a rotor. So if you're on leave, you know, it pulls you out. And all this mm-hmm. stuff. So it used to be manual. But there's like 40 consultants and 40 registrars. Yeah. And they've been trying to get it to work on a piece of software, which I won't name it, that the hospital uses for lots of other purposes and does have rotor functionality. They've been trying for 2 years now to get the radiology department mm-hmm. rotor to work on it, and they can't. And that's just because, you know, general systems often don't work well for specific situations. But my point is that, you know, before thinking about implementing workflow and AI, maybe it'd be sensible to have like a proper e-rostering system. There are lots of much more straightforward things that you can do to improve the efficiency of your department. Obviously, you all know, I'm sure, that there's like no monitoring, right? You know, no one really monitors people's reporting figures.
No.
And you can't do it. It's almost impossible to do it retrospectively because you can obviously get the number of like scans that someone's reported over a period of a year, but how do you work out how many they should have reported? It's very, very difficult because mm-hmm. you know, they've got a job plan. That job plan can change multiple times during the year. To do it properly, when they take leave, you have to work out on what sessions they took the leave. Because some sessions you don't do reporting, right? You may be doing an MDT, for instance.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've had this conversation many times with management that, you know, they ask, can you work out, you know, the efficiency of all the different reports? Without a proper system, you know, that already has the tools that you need to be able to measure, you can't do it looking back. It's impossible. And you think, well, that's crazy, right? That's like the most obvious thing to measure in a radiology department. And yet no hospital can do it.
Yeah. So do Hexarad operate internationally?
We don't do any international reporting. We did actually, Fazana and I had a field trip to China a few years ago.
On company expenses.
Yeah, obviously. Well, we were only going for 4 days, so, you know.
Sam permitted it, yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Wasn't happy.
There was room in the budget for that.
No, it's actually, I can tell you, it was announced yesterday that Hexarad are in the Department of International Trade's first 100 playbook for digital health companies.
Oh, wow.
Another Radcast exclusive.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really exciting for us. And that's come about because we had some conversations with the Department of International Trade. Actually, a friend of ours just like, you guys should talk to this. You know, they have people there who just help you. so we took his advice, made friends with somebody there, and then they were like, yeah, come to China. So we went for 4 days because there was a it was a Department of International Trade I was going to say mission, I don't know what they call them, but they organized this trip, and it was to meet groups of healthcare companies in China who were looking there was pre-COVID a government funding for developing healthcare relations across the UK and China to develop partnerships and export UK businesses to China. That's got postponed because of COVID, so the funding hasn't come out. But whilst we were there, we actually ended up, not while we were there, but we met a couple of companies in the next 6 months, year after that. We ended up signing MOUs to develop, one company was to help them develop breast cancer screening program in one of the provinces in China because they don't have a standardized program. And obviously, Sam is our resident breast radiologist.
Yes, expert.
And they don't have like a primary care system in China, and they don't have a national service. So we worked with a couple of other companies in that top first 100 playbook.
What's an MOU, sorry?
A memorandum of understanding, an intention to work together, basically. Not an official contract, but an intention that we were going to try and work together. And the two companies from China have visited us in the UK a couple of times as well. Fazana went back to China a second time, and then COVID happened. And so things haven't really progressed from that point. But the intention was for us to help. They wanted Hexarad to help them develop the clinical governance and clinical systems that we have in place in Hexarad that make us efficient and high quality for their breast cancer screening program in China. And the second company, we're looking to work with them to develop diagnostic imaging centres, much in the same way. It's actually, that was across Southeast Asia, not China. So the model's slightly different, but it was that. So this was actually an MRI manufacturer that we've signed the MOU with. He builds MRI scanners, and the hospitals can afford to buy them, but they can't manage them or run the imaging service. And so he's not making as many sales as he would like to for his MRIs because the hospital can't manage them when they get them. So a partnership with us would be they provide the imaging equipment and we help manage the service with local radiologists. So it'd be a local, you know, it wouldn't be UK radiologists reporting overseas. We've spent a long time in the early stages of our company really getting the governance and the infrastructure correct so that it can be scalable in a high quality, efficient, tech enabled way. And it's that bit of our company that they're interested in using overseas.
So while we were doing some of our background reading, we were pleased to see that you were exercising your sense of corporate social responsibility. And you're actually involved in a few different charitable projects. So what is it that inspires that?
We've always been, you know, I think you probably got the impression from our values of the kind of people we are and, you know, the way we want to live our lives. And we always thought that if we were building something that became successful, we wanted to use that platform to help other people become successful. And, you know, we're a bit like you put good out in the world and good will come back. And, you know, I guess maybe a bit hippy dippy in the way we think about things, but we want to be a socially conscious company. So the first thing we did, we were at RSNA a couple of years ago, and we met with a charity there called Rad Aid. And so we've actually partnered with them. And they're a company who try to help developing nations build their own imaging infrastructure. So other radiology charities will, and the big manufacturers, they'll donate an MRI scanner or a CT scanner to a hospital. But then they don't, you know, that as soon as a fuse goes in the CT scanner, they can't use it because they don't have the infrastructure or the engineers or the know-how.
The maintenance,
exactly. So Rad Aid actually try and build the systems in place. So it's not just giving them the scanner, it's providing with the engineer, it's teaching them how to use it, helping them develop the patient care pathways. And so we were really inspired by that because it's solving a problem rather than just creating another one. And it's not just throwing money at a problem, it's, you know, putting your time, effort and energy in. So we've done a few things with them. We've provided some online teaching for local radiologists in the networks that they're supporting. And we're also sponsoring a doctor from Malawi to get his radiology accreditation in South Africa with the intention that he'll then go back to Malawi in his local area. He'll be the only qualified radiologist. So he is it for radiology. So we're helping. We're helping to sponsor his development, basically. So that's how we've worked with them. And then last year, we were all quite moved by the Black Lives Matter movement. And we all trained at St George's. I don't know if you saw that there was an open letter from the Afro-Caribbean Society of St George's.
Yes, I did hear about that.
So that really struck a chord with us, and we just wanted to do something. With, you know, it's one of those moments, isn't it, where you can just sit on your soapbox and moan about what's going on in the world, or you can actually do something to try and help things get better and, you know, help affect change. So Fazana and Jay actually met with the ACS at St George's and had long conversations with them about how we could help. And between them, they came up with the idea of this scholarship, which is to help ethnic minority and socially disadvantaged. So there's a couple of criteria on the scholarship, like not having parents who are doctors, for example, you know, things that if you had all of those tick boxes would help you progress through your medical career, make it a bit easier, you know, open doors, that kind of thing. So we wanted to help people who don't have those inherent advantages to give them a leg up. So, you know, I don't know if you've seen that video of the running race, but kind of trying to bring them up to the starting line with the people who are probably a few steps ahead. And so we've launched that scholarship. We actually launched it about a month or so ago, but we didn't do very much promotion on it. So we've now got support from the Royal College of Radiologists, so they're going to advertise it on their website. They're also supporting us with the prizes for the scholarship winner and runners up. And just today I started actively posting about it on LinkedIn, and we're going to have some more promotion of that scholarship so that, you know, to make it more accessible and available to those people who might be interested in applying. And that's something we're going to be doing every year. That'll be a continuous scholarship now, so we're quite excited to, you know, hopefully some people will apply.
Maybe
send us some promotional material, we can help spread the word.
Okay, we'll do.
That sounds great. You sound like a wonderful company all in all.
Thanks.
Okay, so I think that's us done for this evening, so thank you for joining us. It's always inspiring to hear from radiologists who have developed a portfolio career and are really pushing the boundaries of what a typical radiologist does. So hopefully our listeners will feel inspired and informed too. And good luck with Hexarad and any other ventures any of you guys decide to take on. I'm sure Hexarad won't be the last thing you guys do. And I have no doubt that Jamie will be emailing you about how he can sign on after this episode. Get his hands on some wellness
boxes. Wellness box, yeah. They sound great.
Always welcome. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
So, yeah, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next month with another episode. And in the meantime, you can catch all of our previous episodes on all the major podcast platforms and also at anchor.fm/radcast. And if you want any updates in the meantime, then check out our social media channels. So that's at Radcast Academy on Twitter and Instagram. Bye.
Bye.